Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. I'm so excited you're here to enjoy this week's episode. Today, Carla Soans talks with Danny Chavez. Danny is the Senior Vice President at McKinney Economic Development Corporation, and he is a mover and a shaker in the economic development industry. He is garnering recognition both as North America's top 50 economic developer, and he was named D Magazine's Innovation Advocate of the Year. Danny dives into why economic developers should be keeping a finger on the pulse in the tech industry and how McKinney's Innovation Fund is making a difference in job growth, and also what Danny is doing specifically to continue creating an innovation ecosystem in his community. So let's go over to Carla and Danny.
Welcome to the America's Jobs Team. I am super excited to have Danny with us today. Danny, thank you for giving us the time. I know this isn't your first time on the podcast, but we have some different topics to run past you. You've had a lot going on since we had you on the podcast the last time. And I think you have a lot to offer our listening audience. So I'm really excited to have you back for another season of the America's Jobs Team podcast. If it's okay with you, I'm just going to dive right in with questions so we can maximize our time.
Works for me and happy to be here. Thanks, Carla.
Okay. So I want to start. Last time you were on, we didn't talk about kind of your personal journey of how you got into economic development, what drew you into this profession, and, you know, kind of where you started. So I want to start there so that people can kind of understand how you became fascinated with economic development and how you got into these roles.
Sure. So I kind of have an interesting background. I started off working at a county economic development department, just with an internship, mostly doing data research and things of nature in Bexar County, which is where San Antonio, Texas is at. And got an opportunity one day that I got to go work for the Chamber of Commerce and work really on the politics side of economic development, you know, laws, regulations, things of that nature, really working with the chamber to kind of do those types of things. We were not outwardly recruiting companies or anything of that nature, but mostly focusing on, I guess, the legislative aspect of what that does for the members as well as for the region. Consequently, I was working with a business partner on a company called Epix, working in tech, trying to create, you know, applications and things of that nature. And that kind of gave me a different perspective and a look into recruiting companies, kind of saying, hey, if you can talk this language, companies will be more likely to work with you. I went on a pitch one time in San Antonio. I was the only person who was available at the time or whatever to go meet with the governor's office and pitch a couple of companies coming over from Germany. And I was like, I'll take a chance, you know, whatever, I'll do it. We're in the chamber, we can talk about it. And the executive vice president of the San Antonio Economic Development Foundation, Tom Long, found out about it later on. He's like, I heard you did a really good job. And he says, I'm 24 at the time. And he says, how would you like to sell San Antonio around the country? I looked at him and I was like, oh, I'd love to do that. That sounds like a great opportunity for a 24-year-old. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. So then I became the vice president of business development at the San Antonio Economic Development Foundation. And then that's kind of how I got onto this side and, you know, sold the company 2016 and then the software startup and tried a couple of different applications throughout this management consulting, capital fundraising, that type of stuff. And it's kind of all built this, you know, platform to kind of have a tech focus in economic development, which has kind of been my niche focus for a long time.
Okay. So I have to ask, I want to talk about that tech focus in a minute, but I have to ask, like, when you went to college, what was your original plan? Like, what did you think you were going to do?
None of that. I was in ROTC for 3 years. I wanted to go to the military and then sequestration hit around 2012 and they were no longer taking folks. So I got out of ROTC and kind of started. I remember my colonel telling me, he's like, you're a smart guy. I think you'll do fine. Like if you get out of this and kind of tended to be one of the best pieces of advice or, you know, hey, maybe you should try it this way I ever got. And that's kind of how it happened. But yeah, I wanted to be a fighter pilot. That's what I wanted to do. And then this has kind of turned. And I've always had interest like in city development and that type of stuff. High rise construction. I've always loved skyscrapers and things of that nature. But this kind of just started off as that. I took an internship because it was available, and then I found out I loved the industry, and have been in it ever since.
I love that. That's so cool. I'm glad that the timing worked out for us, that you landed in this profession. You know, it wasn't your original course of action. So, okay, so let's talk about this innovation. You've had a lot, your kind of career, and I know you've always kind of focused on those tech companies and the startups. Not the only thing you focused on, but definitely you've become known for that. I think recently you were even recognized by the D Magazine or the Dallas publication as, what was it, the Innovation Advocate of the Year. So yes. Can you talk a little bit about that tech industry and what you're doing as it relates to economic development and what excites you, and especially like what you're seeing that maybe other economic developers that aren't as tied to tech don't even realize that is on the horizon?
I mean, I've just kind of come out and say it right away. Every company's a tech company today. So if you're not focusing on technology as far as a means for your platform, I think it's, or your recruitment strategy or anything like that, I think it's kind of short-sighted. Even companies that take industrial space, they're also known as e-commerce companies, they're web-based sales. So even at that, they're large users, but you're building out space for a company that's probably going to be a tech company in some capacity, if that's what you're investing in. The thing that's going to hit our industry is understanding the difference between tech and then even what I've really recently been talking about, as opposed to talking it in broad terms. Sometimes I have an issue with that in our industry. I call it the innovation economy or the innovation ecosystems of the future, as opposed to calling it tech jobs or tech this, tech that. Mm-hmm. And our industry, along with large other types of companies on the private sector side, have forever called things tech companies, cybersecurity companies, not understanding the applications, what it means from a workforce standpoint, labor analytics being extremely important to our industry. It's how you're able to go out and compete for things, but also how they work and how they function. Historically, economic development organizations tend to be risk adverse when it comes to working with some, software engineer who says, oh, I can create a platform to do X, Y, Z. Well, I'll believe it when you become a, Fortune 100 company or Fortune 500 company and you IPO and then you have actual money, then we'll talk and we'll create 100,000 jobs or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The angle for economic development has changed. Even here in an area, I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro now. Even here, corporate headquarters are king. Folks always look for that type of development opportunity, have had great success in it. But everybody's starting to look at this innovation ecosystem as, well, where are new jobs actually going to be created? There's stats out there that say over 50 to 60% of the jobs of the future have yet to be created over the next 30 years. So where do you think they're going to be created from? Mm-hmm. So historical industries are one thing to look at. As far as they're changing, the job titles will change, the functions will change. New jobs are recreating by technology, 2 to 1 for every job that's lost, 2 are created, sometimes 3, depending on the function or what type of labor it is. The other thing is that tech companies are not just a one size fit all or catch all. There's what we talk about with the innovation fund too, and that's something I'm sure we'll get into, but why it's created is it's highly focused on industry-based. Hey, if you're a PaaS company, a product as a service company, you're different from a SaaS company. Or I've even had companies that are called RaaS companies, which I didn't even know what that terminology was. It's a robot as a service company. Being able to talk to those industries and find out what their ticks are, what they need, what type of workforce they have, and then helping them scale through that process, that's the change that's coming to our industry. I subscribe completely to the belief that I would rather have 4,000, one person companies or, 1,000 four person companies, then 4,000 person companies that could potentially leave, never come back, and then, have a kind of a vacuum in the ecosystem. It's diversification of it. Tech companies cover so many different forms and factions. You have financial services companies that are tech companies, fintech. You have so many different things that we can look at. And all that points to this direction of a hybrid model. Even the larger companies now are starting to look at communities where people want to live and saying, hey, and this happens in San Francisco a lot, they'll put out a Survey Monkey and say, if you didn't have to be here, where would you be? That was happening pre-COVID. That's happening more after COVID. And then opening up innovation centers or innovation hubs or technology centers, where then they'll have those folks who wanted to relocate or move out of be, because that's what they wanted to live. So it's all about building that infrastructure and the ecosystem of being one of those communities that those folks want to live in. And we find that here to be the case in where we're at in North Dallas, in Collin County, having a majority of the technology workforce in the Metroplex.
Yeah, which is awesome. And thank you for kind of walking through that. I do want to talk about the innovation fund. And I think that's one of the tools that you're kind of using to recruit companies and kind of create that story of like, hey, if you're looking for another place, like come here to McKinney. So can you talk a little bit? I know it was launched in 2020. We had a pandemic, but it didn't really slow you all down from what I've gathered. So can you just kind of talk about what some of the wins were that came out of that fund and, you know, any insight that you have to share on others? You know, I don't want you to give away all of your secrets, but for other places that are kind of leaning in this direction, like, is there any advice that you have?
I think that two of the things that make the Innovation Fund unique or specific to what it does is that it's completely digital. So we're able to take the economic development process from 3 months to 36 months, which is the traditional kind of work through an RFP, do all the stuff. We take it down from that period of time to like 5 to 8 weeks. So we can close a deal in 5 to 8 weeks. Sometimes we can close it 3, depending on where our board meets. That process of quickly moving matches the speed at which tech companies do business. They want to do things yesterday. So being able to meet them at least halfway by how fast they want to move is kind of the unique identifier. The other thing is it's extremely targeted on the basic premise. And this is learning more of the capital side or introducing a lot of the venture capital, you know, approach to it, is where the company's at in the startup life cycle. Mm-hmm. Knowing that, you know, there's ideation companies and pre-seed companies that are, you know, 1 to 5 people, a couple founders, and maybe they've made their first hire, you know, they're getting ready to make their first hire. Those folks could be creating the next big idea in your community. Give them a chance. It's low risk, high reward, that type of approach to incentives or other types of attraction strategies will have a big upswing. Silicon Valley wasn't built in a day. Neither will be the Texas Triangle. Neither will be the Research Triangle in North Carolina. But over the course of 20 years, you'll see thousands of those types of companies come through, and many of them will strike and become something huge. So don't discount them. I think that happens a lot in our industry because there's a lack of understanding what they're trying to do. Some of those companies also will never need 100 people. So you won't be able to put in the paper that you created 100 jobs, but you could have 20, 25 person companies that are more than 100 jobs, and they're going to be able to be very profitable for that. Then you look at like what the main purpose of the Innovation Fund is, and that's kind of the second part of this, is it's getting companies from seed to Series A. Where the big rub for our industry or most industries or people believing in startups is that 90% of them fail. Mm-hmm. They fail in this part of the startup life cycle, going from seed when they do their seed fundraising, trying to get to Series A, or tying that also to where they're at in the revenue cycle. So you have the revenue cycle, or you have what they're trying to fundraise at the given time based on revenue and people and all that. It becomes predictable because you can talk about, and I've kind of already explained it, the seed to Series A folks are 1 to 5 people. The seed to Series A folks are 11 to 50 people, usually on it's almost to a T. You can then start working with developers and other groups to start building out the types of real estate spaces they need. Or, you know, if you have a community where you can retrofit a lot of stuff or do adaptive reuse projects, all those things kind of work in favor of that. And then you have product and availability at a pretty low cost all around to bring tech companies in there and be able to revitalize areas with high wages and high growth opportunities to create that next 1,000 person company. If they're getting to that Series A space or Series B, that's already where they're at. But the Innovation Fund focuses on mostly companies from 1 to 50 people. That's pretty much the range. That's what really kind of sets it apart. It's focused primarily on that. Once they get beyond that 50 person, you know, size, hopefully they've, you know, become sticky in your community with the investments you've made. But at the end of the day, once they raise a certain number of capital dollars, you know, that venture capital group or private equity group is the one who's going to kind of dictate where they're at and what they want to, where they want to build. Mm-hmm. The good thing about that is that California and some of the coasts tend to be very expensive. So if the company's from the Midwest or from Texas or from Florida, they're wanting them to stay here now because it is a more cost-effective bang for their buck.
Absolutely.
Why
go ahead.
Well, why the Innovation Fund works too is if you look at permanent business expenditures, you have venture capitalists from both coasts have realized that a majority of their dollars that they've put into these companies has gone to real estate and other types of costs, not to IP and people that they've been investing in. So if you're able to help the company with different types of permanent business expenditures, then you're helping the venture capitalist groups, which is not a bad thing to have, because then you can work with them on their other portfolio companies, potentially create an ecosystem. So that's the benefit of it.
Yeah. So it's so smart. So what drew you to North Dallas area from San Antonio?
Dallas was somewhere I always wanted to be. It's just fourth largest metro in the United States. There's a lot of opportunity here. I love working in development. I love working in, economic development, obviously, as well. But commercial real estate tends to be something I attract to as well. This is a area where that is the industry of focus, and being able to talk about tech companies, some folks maybe roll their eyes and be like, oh, well, there's a lot of them, but maybe we don't want to necessarily work with them. They're crediting and whatnot. We're kind of helping bridge the gap between a startup that really can't get real estate space to where, they are now scaling and needing, a couple thousand square feet or 20,000 square feet or whatever it is, getting into the double digits, because their growth happens. It's one customer away from being the next big thing, right?
Right.
And so if you can, get your board, sell your board on that, or other types of decision-making authorities, you start to see that this is what's happening in areas that have grown. That is something. But Dallas has just been amazing as a community. The tech community is growing here. It's growing in Texas all around. But it has a lot of opportunities. That's why I wanted to be here, and very happy to be in McKinney as well.
Good. That's awesome. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the role of mentors in your. I know your journey from wanting to be a fighter pilot to now helping tech companies scale is different than where you started. But what role, you kind of talked a little bit about your ROTC officer kind of guiding you. Has there been other mentors that have really played a role for you as you've embarked on this career?
Absolutely. I had a professor, Dr. Dana Watts. She really helped me kind of through that transition of, oh, I thought I was going to do this, and then continue with ROTC. She really helped me kind of cultivate through my career path that, hey, this is what I think you can do. And, graduated with a political science degree, but I kind of already knew the application of where I wanted to do with it at that point with her guidance and kind of doing, no, I want to get into economic development. So that internship was also helpful. And then Sean Williams, who was a mentor and direct report, the COO of the company that ended up working with us with our tech startup, my business partner and I, just was instrumental in explaining the industry. He was a serial entrepreneur, kind of showed me how to do different things, to think of things differently. If he was, somebody who would, talk about all the time just how incentives are dumb or how they could work or how you need to invest in these types of companies because they turn into it. And it resonates and you learn over the course of time. And then, Jake Harris, Harris Bay, based out in California, they do amazing developments all over. Rahul Patel, down in San Antonio, runs a tax law firm, but also has like an MBA agency, which is amazing. Those are all folks who have just been, great mentors to me and really just given me great advice all around. So yeah, I mean, mentors have been a huge part of my success. I don't think you can get anywhere without having a good, network of folks who genuinely care, want to see you be successful. I think that's important if you want to go into executive leadership, that you have to establish those types of relationships. And once you do, then you really have the bandwidth to, fall back on asking folks questions, which is a vulnerability thing, but at the same time, the effectiveness long-term is worth it for sure.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that executive leadership, because you obviously one of the top 50 economic developers. I think a lot of people have really recognized, including the D Magazine, just what an incredible economic developer you are and how smart, like you're just mad smart. So when you think about your career and what you want others to know about economic development, like what do you feel like as economic developers we should do to kind of bring the next generation along and into this work?
I mean, I think it's a relevancy play. I think in order to be, and I appreciate all the kind words, that's really nice. And I sometimes just overwhelming kind of see how much we've done and just want to move and shake. I think economic development's role is changing. I think we've had to change through different stages of, where the economy is, where, I guess now pandemic, what office space is going to look like in the future, what some people are saying, what others are. I think the areas that have been high growth areas too, you think like the Southeast, you think of the Sun Belt, you think of all these areas, they've been very aggressive on economic development. Not really looking at kind of something I mentioned earlier on the coasts, private equity groups, venture capitalists, they're the ones bringing the companies in. They're the ones, they have a different role in the economic development process, but realizing that it goes beyond just, site selectors, the economic developer, or even from the commercial real estate side, that there's other players in this ecosystem that's been built now, that if you want to introduce, industries of the future to your community, that has to be a much broader net. And I think that's something that to remain relevant and our role in, creating jobs and becoming, good stewards of our communities or regions. I think that's something that has, and I've seen a lot of this too. It's not that it's not happening. It's just something that it's a continued focus. It's understanding that, I always tell this joke, like it's one of those economic development jokes of every community says the same four industries that they're going after. Well, why I changed, and we were just at one of your summits, and or I guess it's the destination ones now, which I really loved. But, instead of saying tech is one of the industries of focus we're going after, well, we're going after the innovation economy. We're not going after tech jobs specifically. That's kind of implied, right? But in every single industry that everybody goes after, advanced manufacturing, what is that? Some type of tech job. It's robotics. It's artificial intelligence. Financial services. Well, most banks, if they're still in business, are a tech company with online banking, and they need software developers. They need all that type of stuff. Those are, the focus headquarters. They have entire IT departments. This kind of just runs the gamut of it. So we're focused on the innovation economy of companies or and entrepreneurs who are trying to create it. So getting in front of that, instead of just saying everything's a tech job or everything's this, not being open to the shift of change that even the large companies are having to do as well. I think one of the big challenges we'll have on our front is the work from anywhere conversation. I know that it seems folks, I was talking to a developer the other day that their interpretation on the deals that they're doing right now is that the new world or the new normal will not be that different from the normal we're used to. It's just getting to that point. Some folks will want to work from home. That's fine. Flexible work, I don't think it's going anywhere, but there are glaring discrepancies of how work from home will be possible for everyone. One, from a security standpoint, using personal networks for confidential information. We'll see how long it lasts without going to the hub. And then other, types of things that we'll see. I mean, I just think it's being open to that as economic developers, being open to the change, seeing the change, and our role as being that kind of steward and bringing those types of ideas to the communities that we're in. I think that's a huge role for us in the future.
So I have one last question for you. And I know we're running real close on time, but I have to ask it because I think it's important. So you have always been, you even said it, kind of like a mover and shaker. Like it's hard to even like stop and really celebrate because you're just moving and shaking along. And I think, those of us that have kind of known you for a little while and have kind of watched your journey so far, you have so many years left in this profession, but that mover and shaker, that mentality, sometimes we see people that have that and are so excited and they get snatched up and move into the private sector because in economic development, sometimes you know what needs to be done, but the community isn't quite ready for you yet. Like they're not ready for that idea yet. It's going to be a longer term play. How have you just kind of managed your energy around like those that may not have been able to catch the bug as fast as you have, and you have to work them along in a process? How have you just kind of managed that and tempered yourself and had patience and grace and humility in those processes that can be really, really hard when you know what needs to be done?
This is always a challenge that you hit in the head. I will say with the Innovation Fund, I've seen what its potential is. I've already come to kind of grips with the fact that explaining that to other folks will take time. It didn't take very long. I sold the board here on it with my CEO, and that he's like, hey, this is something we need to go with. This is going to have legs. It's going to be able to become I think it actually is about 60% of our entire lead pipeline comes from the Innovation Fund now. Mm-hmm. Recognizing what that is and how it's going to have to be explained, what I've always done to kind of mitigate that is build presentations and ideas and sift through all of it into the late hours of the night and present something that is not arguable. Mm-hmm. So that's just, it's economic fact. It's statistically, you're not going to really be able to change the idea. You can bring different, components of it to the table. But for the most part, I mean, this was something that was put forward. Sometimes we still have some issues with, okay, why would we want to do that? Or why would we want to do this? But for the most part, it's just a genuinely understood, like, hey, this is the next generation of economic development. This is what this is doing for our community, is driving a completely new industry or industries underneath the macro of technology and creating that innovation economy, which again, starts building collision, starts having folks and on the capital side want to come in. It brings workforce, which then means the larger companies start saying, oh, hey, well, there's 1,000 software developers there. All right, I need to be there.
I gotta go. Yep.
That's that type of focus. So, I appreciate the moving and shaking attitude, but if you move and shake, you don't really want to ever, I don't think you put forward ideas that don't think move the needle. And very quickly, as that type of mentality, you realize that if there's an idea that has legs, you really double down on it. I can come up with 1,000 ideas and it maybe 2 of them make sense, but I don't waste time with the other 998 that don't make sense. So it's all about time allocation, time management. Okay, I think this needs to go. Let me learn everything about it and then present it to win in a way that it's just unarguable. That's usually how I go about it. Maybe that's not the best way. Maybe I wouldn't subscribe it or prescribe it to anybody else to do it that way, but that's kind of how my mind works.
Well, it makes sense to me. And I think you've done an amazing job with all of your work. I think it's fascinating. It's something that every time we talk to you at our team, we walk away and think, gosh, we've learned something. And just your energy and your enthusiasm, and that you have that spark where it just kind of is that magnet of like, that makes sense and doing great things. So thank you for taking time out of what I know is a busy, your pipeline's full, your day is full. And thank you for allocating a little time for us to share that with our listening audience. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I appreciate y'all. Love working with you, Carla, Bay. Appreciate everything and hope to, see you guys soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for sticking with us to the very end. And again, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. The America's Jobs Team podcast releases episodes every week that are specifically curated for economic developers like you looking to stay in the know about industry trends, leadership development, career management, growing high-performing organizations, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, or really any other preferred podcast outlet that you use. America's Jobs Team is audio engineered by Joshua Wieters and produced by Faye Davis.